This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Our next story, which is about the growing trend where people are keeping exotic animals as pets. So it's been a small run of viral videos lately. It started a while ago with that sun bear. You know, there have been tigers, there have been eagles. So it's just a lot of animals where they shouldn't be.
So to start with the most recent set, you might have seen two tigers just casually wandering around a village in Terengganu. Pahilitan said that their tame nature meant that they were most likely someone's pets. And then, of course, earlier this year, there was that local singer who was caught keeping a sun bear in her apartment. She thought it was a pet dog.
A dog to which she gave chocolate. I have no words for that.
It's obviously just an excuse. And because there are also exotic animals being sold on Instagram, which really shocked me when I found out, because apparently the most popular ones are dusky leaf monkeys and leopard cats. So people usually post pictures of these animals wearing cute clothes and diapers and whatnot. And even when influencers on social media do this, it helps to popularize the idea of owning exotic pets.
So we weren't the first people on the station today to actually cover this. Earlier, the Bigger Picture team spoke with Kanita Krishnasamy, Director of Traffic in Southeast Asia. She explained how smugglers and illegal traders find these exotic animals, and that's often in the juvenile stage.
It really depends on the species, and based on what we're seeing being offered within online platforms, almost all of them are juvenile animals. Now, these juvenile animals are very likely, very highly likely, only acquired from taking them from the wild. So there's likely a string of pretty solid network of collectors and hunters who are acquiring these animals from the wild and then channeling them to the middlemen or the traders. That is what you're seeing that's sort of ending up being offered for sale online.
Kanita also said that owners often fail to understand the risks and responsibilities involved in keeping these pets.
People have to remember that a vast majority of these animals are wild animals, which means they are very likely, they were very likely taken from the wild. And while they are babies right now and they might be all cute and cuddly, at some point in the very near future, they're all going to grow up. Mm-hmm. So they need to think about whether or not they want a full-grown sun bear, for example, in their living room. A lot of these individuals are not really experts in taking care of wild animals. They may not be prepared for what's coming in the future. So there is a sense of responsibility. And there's also an issue about disease risk that people need to consider, because they're not your simple, you know, rabbit or hedgehog or cat and dog. And even when you own these animals, there are disease risks that you have to consider. There are frequent visits to the vets that are necessary. And some of these individuals, if they are purchasing these animals illegally, if the animal falls sick, we're not sure if they're actually going to provide for these animals by taking them to the vet or to the hospital, for example, because there's this fear of getting caught. Mm-hmm.
So that was Kanita Krishnasamy, Director of Traffic in Southeast Asia. You can listen to the full conversation by downloading the podcast. It was on Daily Digest earlier today. And her name, again, is Kanita Krishnasamy, Director of Traffic in Southeast Asia. So if you look that up, the podcast should come right up. And we wanted to get into the psychology of why people want to keep exotic animals as pets, because these are clearly not dogs to which you give chocolate for some reason. And also, it's just an odd symbol of prestige and status. We'll be getting to that after this with our guest, Dr. Chua Suk Ning, clinical psychologist at Relate, and that will be coming your way after this. If you have any thoughts at all, do share them. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:15 in the evening. You are listening to Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin. And more specifically, you're listening to a conversation that is about exotic animals that have suddenly kind of proliferated as pets. We're seeing a few things pop up here and there, but we're also seeing people boast about, you know, having dusky leaf monkeys, for example, on Instagram. And so we're trying to understand why there is this continued demand, despite all the information out there about how owning illegal and exotic pets just are not an acceptable thing. So with us on the line is clinical psychologist, Dr. Chua Suk Ning. Suk Ning, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So why would you say in the first place that exotic pet ownership is appealing? Why does it appeal to people?
There appear to be several reasons why people would do it. I think you mentioned one of it being status. You know, you have something that's really rare and only you have it, so it sets you apart from everyone else. So I think that seems to be that. There's also a subset of people who genuinely think that they are doing something good. You know, they're saving a rare species from extinction. And then you have those who I think just don't think it through and think it's cool.
And I guess where do you see the correlation between being wealthy on one hand and owning exotic pets on the other? What could be the motivation there?
There are several, I think, well-known cases, I think, wealthy people having exotic pets, but we have to remember that, you know, the illegal trade of exotic pets isn't driven primarily by just the wealthy. It's, I think, just regular people who purchase exotic pets, and then they are the wealthy who maybe would be spending tens of thousands to purchase a very rare animal in the wild. For perhaps those individuals, I think it is sort of feeding into their ego, their sense that maybe they're going to tame something that seems untamable, something that they can show off to people who visit them, and again, setting them apart from the rest of the world. Everyone else who could not afford that or does not have access to that, they have it.
Is there anything in our messaging on the media that needs to change as well? For example, maybe on social media, we're often seeing how cute animals get treated like human beings or anthropomorphized.
It's a hard word, yeah.
the smart people word. Yeah. Does it contribute to the problem in terms of how people understand their relationship with animals?
I think so. We know that animals are, especially, let's say we talk about domesticated species like the dogs or cats, you know, people took them and took animals from the wild, and over the years, many, many years, we have created new species that are bred for our sake, you know, to connect with humans. And we also know that there are animals that are therapy dogs or therapy pets, you know, so they do feed into something innately human that perhaps, you know, it gives us comfort, and another live being out there meets our needs. And so when we see cute animals as humans and we relate to them and we don't remember, especially for exotic pets, that they are not there to serve us. You know, they really belong to the wild and they have a whole ecosystem of their own that they were thriving in, and then we also need to put an effort to maintain that. But we're taking them out of that ecosystem primarily because we thought they were cute, or we thought, oh, I want that. You know, I think that's, and we talk about motivations, I think that would be the first thought, like just I want that rather than anything else.
But part of, so aside from wanting that, I think part of keeping it then is also misreading emotions into, you know, a cute animal looking at you, right? And so I suppose, as you say, we've been trained by puppies and kittens to read affection into those glances. How do we kind of clear that up when we're looking at, for example, a cute monkey or, you know, something like that might not be feeling that way for us at all, but has all the correct expressions that we would read as affection?
Yes. Well, you know, so monkeys, I think especially the closer you are to something that looks like us, you know, we are going to see a lot more expression in them that reminds us of us. So you're right that we do read emotions into animals that aren't there. Do animals feel? Of course, but how they express it, it could be very different from how humans would express it. And it doesn't mean that the same things that affect us would affect animals. For example, like if you train a dog, and I love watching Fiza Milan and the compact leader, you wouldn't train a child that way. You know, that would not be the best way to train a child. But for a dog, that's what works for them. So I think understanding that there are distinct differences, and especially for exotic animals, we don't have that much understanding of them. You know, with scientists are going out to their native habitat and trying to understand them, but taking them into your home, you are actually changing their behavior because you're domesticating them. And we don't know what signs of distress they are showing anymore. We don't know whether the same behavior means the same thing. Because now, especially if you had them since a baby, which you mentioned, a lot of the exotic trade happens that way. You know, we don't know whether they're actually growing up healthily.
And there was this whole issue a few years back on how the Harry Potter movies potentially led to an increase in demand for owls as pets. Now, with The Lion King, we just might see a surge in demand for pet lion cubs.
Or meerkats.
Yeah. Is there any way?
No one wants pigs? Okay.
You never know. They're out there. Pot-bellied pigs are apparently quite popular.
Exactly, yeah. What's the best way? I think information, but also, you know, so if you think about that on how, what the responsibility are of maybe filmmakers and people who are actually producing the show, they could actually come up with a message that discourages people from purchasing these animals. But Harry Potter's, I think, I do agree with you that there could be a surge of demand. But Harry Potter, it was a little different because Harry did have that owl. Whereas in The Lion King, there are no humans owning the animal. Mm. So that might be a different message. The Lion King does, you know, imbue the animals with a lot of human characteristics, and so that might be the dangerous side of that. But on the plus side, it does show you the beauty of animals in their natural habitat, and that might be a way to go. And I think filmmakers can also pass on the message that you shouldn't be adopting or purchasing or supporting illegal trade in any way, that these animals do belong to the wild, and therefore, rather than taking them out of their habitat, we should be doing more to maintain and sustain their habitat.
Mm-hmm. There is information online that tells us about the cruel and inhumane ways which these animals are poached. For example, the mothers of the young babies are killed so that the baby animals can be captured and sold. Is this kind of messaging enough to discourage people from buying exotic pets?
No, clearly not. So, as you said, you went on Instagram and you can see how easily, there's a lot of access to these animals. And part of the problem is that the trade isn't very well regulated. So some countries now are looking at what they call a positive list. So rather than saying these animals are banned, they're only coming up with a list that says only these animals are allowed. And so the Netherlands is one of the few countries in the world to come up with a positive list. And that's where I think conservation efforts are heading towards, rather than saying, trying to, you know, continue to update a list every time we discover a new species. Just say, no, none of those animals are allowed, and only these animals are allowed for you to raise as pets. And part of the problem, is that, when poverty abounds, you get illegal trade. So people who are buying them, they are motivated to seek them out. You know, they go with the intention, okay, what I want is this. So I don't think that's enough to discourage them from it, particularly from the videos I've seen online. They're so horrific that people turn them off. You know, it starts to create such a awful feeling in you that people try to escape the feeling. So no one's staying maybe to watch the full video and to really educate themselves about how of the cruel practices.
So I guess the question for me then is, what would be more effective, especially when you are contesting against the cuteness of Instagram videos, the cuteness of people saying, look, you can have this thing and dress it up and it can sleep with you. And, you know, just when you have that sort of messaging versus, like you said, the sort of really awful, like, I can't even watch that. You know, what is a good middle ground to get people to really think about what it is that they're doing?
Man, the public education efforts, I think that more people should talk about it in a palatable, accessible way. So we talked about, even as with showings of The Lion King, it's such a ready platform, I think, to couple that with how do tigers live in the wild and not take them out of it. And I think appreciating the beauty of wild animals in nature is one thing. You know, every time we see them, you know, when we look at monkeys, or you mentioned there were a lot of monkeys out there, we see them as babies. I mean, I have a dog, and I know that a lot of pet owners refer themselves to mommy. And so, you know, that there's that kind of attachment, and just reminding it, continue reminding it, no, they are a separate species. I know you have great affection for the animals. And so with that great affection, the great affection also means understanding what they need best. And what they need best may not be you. Maybe what you need is them, but they may not need you the same way. And so I think trying to understand why people are heading that way. I'm not sure we can really stop the wealthy from purchasing it unless we have stricter regulations and more people talking about it. I think if the public is aware of it and the sentiments become much more negative, that's probably going to have an effect.
Suk Ning, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Chua Suk Ning, clinical psychologist from Relate. You also heard earlier from Kanita Krishnasamy, Director of Traffic in Southeast Asia. That was from a show that aired in the 2 o'clock hour. And you can find the full conversation by looking for Endangering the Lives of Endangered Wildlife. We've been asking you for your thoughts, and we do have this message here from Jaya.
Look in the media each time a python or any type of wildlife is caught. The authorities are gleefully holding and posing with them. Says a lot about our respect for our wildlife. See the way we treat our stray cats and dogs. Visit any pasar and you will see their sorry state.
Yeah, I think that Suk Ning raised a lot of important emotional points about why it is people relate to animals. And part of it is that, right? Part of it is, I think Jaya's use of the word glee is interesting because it does look that way. It's like, woohoo, look at what we found. And, and it's not done with that kind of respect and reverence, I think, that we would... You know, I don't know why watching a nature documentary we're like awestruck, you know, when David Attenborough's voice is laid over it, suddenly everything's amazing. But like when we see these sorts of animals in our actual, you know, rich... country, we're just like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, it's kind of coming off with like, oh, look at this poor dumb animal invading our villages or like invading our homes and all that. And it is true that perhaps we don't treat them with enough respect, right? We don't necessarily understand the boundaries that exist, that we are technically encroaching on their land, their living spaces, that we should feel a bit more, oh dear.
You know? Maybe just because they're not cute, you know? They're not like a cute baby monkey or anything like that. It's a tiger or a python. So it's like, eh.
Yeah, I think we
caught this miscreant.
Yeah.
We can't overestimate the importance of cuteness, I think, in this conversation. Because if you look at all the animals that have been kept in homes, they're mostly cute. Some are majestic, but generally speaking, it's got the whole slow lorry, you know, like giant eye thing. We have a message here from Mason who says, you know, I'm almost certain not to forget paying Maybank on time after seeing the tiger. So there you go, Maybank. Free marketing for you. Keep those thoughts coming. What do you think it is about the psychology of people who want to own these exotic pets? Is it a status symbol? And what's going to work to kind of do away with it? Call us with your thoughts, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.